supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we're going to look at a hot topic, grass clippings. We're going to explain why they should always be left on a lawn for many reasons. And we're going to reiterate our warning about the new herbicides that are turning grass clippings into compost pile killers. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. But before that, we got a heapin' helpin' of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kurt, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Kurt. How are you, sir?
Not too bad myself.
And where is Kurt not too bad?
I live in Yuba City, California.
Okay, very good. Out on the left coast.
Yes.
What can
Been out here about 2 years now.
And oh, okay, so where are you from?
Originally, I'm from Missouri.
Whoa, that's a culture shock right there, isn't it, Kurt?
Sure is.
Well, what can we do for Kurt, formerly from Missouri, now in California?
What I'm trying to do is trying to find a source for mustard seeds.
Right.
I want to grow my own mustard.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't seem to find a company that sells them that I can grow. I can find mustard greens, but
right.
I can't find the mustard to grow for to make my own mustard.
Well, they are all the same mustard, Kurt.
They are.
They are. Matter of fact, when you go to a store and you buy a packet of seeds that says mustard greens, or you send away through a catalog and get a packet of seeds that says mustard greens, and you see they are beautiful plants. You've obviously looked at the images of mustard greens with their beautiful crinkled leaves and the gorgeous variegations of red and purple.
Yes.
What you are putting into the ground is mustard seed. Now, most people grow the greens specifically for the greens.
Right.
They are much more heat tolerant than lettuce and spinach, and they are naturally spicy. They taste like mustard. They have a wonderful mouthfeel to them. And in my garden, what I like to do is make a ham sandwich with mustard, but without any liquid. I'll just have the ham and a bunch of mustard greens, and that way you get your greens, and it has the same flavor as if you would put a spicy mustard on to the sandwich. So a lot of people will keep picking the greens early. You know, they're when they're smallest, they're the most tender. As they get bigger, they will start to get hotter. They're also blindingly ornamental. I know people who grow mustard greens who don't even eat them. It's not an exaggeration to say that the leaves can get to be 2 feet tall with all these vibrant colors, some of the most vibrant colors you'll ever see in the garden.
I've seen pictures. Yeah.
So if you let them go, they will shoot up little stalks in the center, and the stalks will produce beautiful yellow flowers. Now, these yellow flowers themselves are incredibly beneficial. These are the type of flowers that bring in a lot of pollinators and a lot of beneficial insects to the garden. They're just the right size. And then if you leave the flowers alone, the flowers will develop into seed pods. And as with any crop that you're going to harvest like this, you want to leave those seed pods on the plant until they are dry and crinkly.
Okay.
And then you would go out with a pair of scissors and maybe have a cardboard box cut open underneath, something to catch everything, or a bowl underneath, and carefully cut off the dried flower heads. So they drop into the bowl, because I think a lot of the seeds are going to come pouring out.
Yeah.
The flowers will burst open. The seed pods will burst open. So this is, you'll have to learn the timing on this.
Okay.
But then the seeds that were inside those pods, they're your mustard seeds.
Okay.
So in cultivation, you know, in like Goulden's land or whatever, these are giant fields. And they've got the timing down perfectly, and they're all harvested mechanically at around the same time, dried, and then ground up. And it's my understanding that you don't need a lot of seed to make a great mustard, but you'd need a lot of plants. And what you may find now that you know what you're looking for is there may be different varieties of mustard greens that produce seeds of different piquantness, you know, the mild ones versus the really spicy ones. And, you know, look around at the specialty seed suppliers, people who specialize in herbs and greens, and you'll find a great selection of mustard greens to grow. And when the mustard greens are done, you got your mustard seed, man.
That sounds good.
All right, Kurt?
I appreciate you.
All right.
A lot of help. Thank you.
You take care, and in a couple of years, you'll cut the mustard.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Julie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike.
Oh, well, thank you, Julie. How are you?
I'm quite fine, thanks.
And where is Julie quite fine?
In Manahawkin, New Jersey.
Okay. What part of Jersey is that?
It's just before you go over the causeway to Long Beach Island.
Okay, so you're down along the shoreline.
Right, and we've got a home on a saltwater tidal creek that leads into Little Egg Harbor Bay. We got about 4.5 feet of water on our property during Hurricane Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And my questions for you are two. We've got a very robust pine tree that's about 25 feet tall, and then 9 arborvitaes that serve as kind of like border trees. They're all looking not well. So I thought I would call and see if you had any suggestions so we can save these plantings of ours.
Well, the suggestions would have helped the most right after the water receded. And there's really only one thing you can do when plants like this get inundated with salt, and that's flush them with clean water, with fresh water, and get as much of the salt away from the root system as possible. Have you done that at all, or have you just been dependent on rain?
We've mostly been dependent on rain, but they've had a couple of good flushings that I did with fresh water. But that's been more recently, probably in the last month or so.
Right, because now the weather's heating up, they're starting to show any signs of the stress. So
exactly.
This is the time to keep them watered, have a heavier hand with the water than you would during normal times. I hope you haven't fed them or done anything like that.
No, we really haven't touched them.
Okay, good. And you haven't mulched them or anything?
No.
You know, there's a running joke on this show. It doesn't matter what the question is. The answer is compost. But that's especially true where you are because, you know, almost by definition, you have very sandy soil.
Yes, that's right. So would you suggest that we do compost around the arborvitaes and the pine?
Yes. Put the compost down first. Compost is the antidote to sandy soil because sandy soil luckily drains well, but it doesn't hold nutrients. So when you mix in a lot of compost, and I don't mean mix it in, I mean just apply it to the surface, it'll work down. And it'll provide some nice, gentle, natural nutrition to the evergreens. And then, especially during heat waves this summer, real slow, deep waterings once or twice a week when you don't get rain, like having a hose at the base of each tree going for like 4 to 6 hours, just going drip, 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 or set up a drip irrigation line with one of the soaker hoses, the hoses that sweat,
yes,
or the hoses that drip. And also, just realize some of these trees are probably not going to make it, and you're going to have to come up with plan B. But for instance, if the arborvitae are in a straight line, then when it comes time to replace them, you want to stagger the line. You want to do it in a series of triangles or diamonds.
Okay.
It's a better look. It gives you better screening. And then you don't have that horror of tree number five dying. And what do?
Right, exactly. That makes a lot of sense. Because so, they currently are in a straight line.
Yeah, most people did. Most people planted them in a straight line. Some people got away with it. I always find the tree number four dies, you know, when it's like 20 years old, right? And then, And then what do? Whereby if you stagger the plantings, you actually get better screening and replacement of plants becomes much easier.
Oh, it's a great suggestion. I really appreciate your help, Mike.
All right. Well, good luck, Julian. I'm glad you came through it okay.
Yeah, we sure did. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Good luck this summer.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who's currently picking peas that the kinds you eat pod and all, like snow and snap peas, taste best when picked fairly small, just as the peas are starting to bulge inside those tasty edible pods. And picking early also triggers the plants to produce lots more peas. The harvest can be four times as big when you pick your peas while they're nice and small. Just don't go picking those pods just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and 18 reasons to leave those grass clippings on your lawn and not to collect them. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee is dedicated to providing all things needed for planting and growing gardens. Information, instructions, supplies, and more online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, there are many reasons not to bag your grass clippings. They're problematic in compost piles. They are good for feeding your lawn when left behind. But the most insidious reason of all are new persistent herbicides that can make those grass clippings deadly to other plants. It's important information you won't want to miss, and it's coming up in the question of the week. In the meantime, lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Daniel, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well,
and long-time wanting to, actually.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you, Daniel. Where are you?
I'm in Portland, Tennessee. It's the strawberry capital of the world.
Is it really?
I believe a lot of researchers came and they declared it a couple of years ago.
Really? Okay, good, good. So you have a perfect climate for growing strawberries.
Oh, yeah.
So what can we do for you?
Well, it actually has to do with strawberries, but I'll give you a little backstory.
Go ahead.
Okay, I go to school at Ohio State University, and me and my friends were at a big store, and they had these little stands with pots that had seeds in them, you know?
Right.
And we're only, they were only a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not gonna not buy that. So I took it back to the dorm, and I put it on my windowsill, and I planted it, you know? And I'm on the 23rd floor of the dorm, which is crazy, you know?
And it gets so, lots of light, I presume?
That's the thing. I was on one side of the tower, so I'd have it in the morning on my side, and then I'd take it to the other side of the dorm, to one of my friend's room.
Ha!
Sunlight.
So you're a traveling plant man.
I'd take it to the babysitter, I'd call them. So, yeah, I wasn't really expecting anything, but a few weeks later, I had a full-fledged plant with a ton of leaves. So then I came back home, back to Tennessee, and that's where I am now. I don't know what to do.
Oh, okay, so you have a healthy plant that's in a pot with a bunch of leaves, and do you see any flowers forming?
Just a bunch of leaves, that's all I can see.
Okay, well, that's no problem. Can you put it in a bigger pot and put it outside?
That's one of my questions. One of my friends, Brannigan, she made me a pot in ceramics class, so that's what I want to transfer it to.
Right.
But I don't know, like, the steps of, or, like, the soil or whatever.
Gotcha.
To do it.
Are there drainage holes in the bottom of the pot?
She didn't put them in, but while it was in the fire or whatever, it cracked. There's a crack on the bottom. And that's kind of what I figured would drain it, you know.
Well, you're going to have to check that out. You're going to have to fill the pot with water and see how quickly it empties. Because ceramic pots, well, all pots, all plant pots need good drainage holes in the bottom. And with plastic, you know, for instance, I've gotten plastic window boxes and stuff that didn't have drainage holes, and it's a can of corn. It's a piece of cake. You just take a lighter and you warm up the tip of a screwdriver or something like that, and you just push it through the plastic. Obviously, that won't work for ceramic, and you got to know what you're doing to drill holes in ceramic. So what I'm going to suggest is you keep her pot in a nice place, and instead you just go out and get a nice little plastic pot that's a little bigger than the one you have. Your parents may have one around. Your parents' friends may have one around. And then what you want to do is get a little bag of a potting soil, of soil-free mix. Or if it's just one plant, find some compost. All we would need is a little bit of compost, maybe a quart. And then what you'll do is you'll just squeeze the sides of the pot you have, and you'll turn it upside down in your hand. It'll come out, and then you'll fill the new pot with as much soil as you need to bring the top of the thing up to the top of the new pot. You plop it in. You fill around it with more compost or good potting soil, and then you water it really well. But you're going to water it by sitting it in a big dish of water and letting the water come up through the drainage holes for like an hour. And then sit it outside and expose it to rain. If it doesn't get rain, do that like once or twice a week, depending on how quickly it's drying out. Just sit it in water because, I mean, you already carried this baby back and forth from room to room. And once it settles in, it should produce flowers, and those flowers should become strawberries. And then when it's all done, what you'll need to do is then plant it in the ground somewhere after it doesn't produce strawberries anymore. And then depending on the type of plant it is, it may send out runners, and you'll eventually create a little strawberry patch. All right, man?
All right, that's all I need.
All right, good luck, Daniel.
Thank you very much.
Take care, sir. Bye. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent today. Thank you very much. Where is Sarah Good?
in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
Ah, beautiful little area right on the Delaware River. What can we do for Sarah?
I have been planning a garden for the past couple of years. It's in a little plot about, I would say, 6 feet long by 4 feet deep. And I get these disgusting, I guess they're weeds. They look like carrots with these icky brown tops. They attract flies, and they grow out of these little egg-shaped things that are all gooey and white inside. And no matter how much I try to dig them up, I keep getting them. This is the second year in a row that I've been getting them. And they're just hideous and disgusting.
These don't sound like plants. Is your garden bed mulched with wood or bark?
It used to be this really awful wood mix,
mm-hmm.
and I dug most of it up and replaced it with really, really good mulch last year.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like a little line on either side of the wood still, and it starts there, and then the like carrot-looking things move
mm-hmm.
into my garden.
Yes, and what is your really good mulch? What is your new mulch? Mulch kind of drives me crazy. It's one of my pet peeves. Mulch doesn't refer to anything specific. Mulch is anything that covers the surface of the soil to retain moisture and prevent weeds. So what is your good mulch composed of?
It's like a lobster shell kind of thing. It's like composted lobster shells. And it's just like that good smelling, rich, dark colored stuff that I bought at the garden center.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you bought lobster shell compost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that stuff is great.
Yeah, I got enormous plants last year, and it smelled good, and everything grew really, really nicely, except these things.
Yes. No, it sounds like they're growing really well, Sarah. Your quote, slimy weeds, which I believe are a form of stinkhorn fungus. They are not plants. They are not from the world of the green. They are from the world of the gray. They are fungal organisms that are desperately trying to break down the remaining wood products in your garden. One of the, quote, jobs of fungi in our environment is to latch on to wood. Because otherwise, you know, a tree falls in the forest, it would just lay there. And what happens instead is these fungal organisms are ubiquitous. We're always inhaling them, for instance. Most of them are just there. They're not good or bad. But they settle on wood, dead wood, and they immediately accelerate the pace of decomposition. Unfortunately, there's still enough wood left in your soil that it is cultivating these things. And there are things called bird's nest fungus. There are a kind of a false different mushrooms. It sounded like you had some stinkhorn in there, nothing personal. You might even have some artillery fungus, but you probably wouldn't notice that unless there was something light-colored nearby for the spores to shoot at and stain. You don't have anything stained nearby, weirdly, do you?
No.
Well, they should be harmless. Now, when you try to pull them or anything, do they just fall apart on you?
I have to dig them out. If I pull them, they kind of just, they get all slimy. Like, they don't let me pull them out.
Right.
So I dig underneath, and usually when I dig under one, I find a bunch of the little egg things there. They attract flies.
Yes.
And then they look kind of weird.
Yes, that's why I think they're the stinkhorn fungus.
Right.
Should you allow them to finish their fruiting body, it is first of all, it's triple X-rated under the right conditions, and second, it smells like carrion, so it does attract flies. That's where it gets the name stinkhorn. So you got to get the wood out of there. Keep adding compost. Don't break those things open and inhale the spores, just to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
You should probably wear a dust mask when you dig them out. And anytime you find a little piece of wood or something like that in there, you want to really make sure that you get it out. And as much as you can, without harming the balance of the nutrients in your garden. Adding a little bit of nitrogen might help them decompose faster. But this is just the remnants. I knew there had been wood involved, obviously. And this is just the remnants of these things that are actually trying to help you get rid of the last of the wood, although you clearly don't like their methodology.
Yeah, okay. So I think I can do that. That sounds pretty easy. Thank you.
And the compost you're using is sensational, and this will go away. And a warning to everybody out there to keep wood out of garden areas.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Sarah. Good luck and have a great summer.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jerry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. Jerry, how are you, sir?
Just fine.
And where is Jerry Fine?
Cambridge City, Indiana.
And where is that, sir?
We're about 50 miles east of Indianapolis.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Jerry in the great state of Indiana?
Well, I was looking at setting out a goji bush, and it's coming. It's a potted plant. And I wondered about putting some good potting soil around it when I put it out.
So you bought yourself a goji berry bush, huh?
Yes, yes.
And are you a fan of goji products? Do you like take goji juice and?
Oh, I have no idea. I just thought I'd put one out, so I got one this year and put it out.
Okay, so is it already planted or is it still in the pot?
No, it's still in the pot.
Okay.
I've been setting it outside during the daytime to let it kind of acclimate.
Okay, good. And it's still outside.
Yeah.
Okay, good. And is it a decent size?
It's about 8 or 10 inches tall.
Okay. And good. So it's, you know, we're certainly into a nice, safe season for putting plants in the ground. Now, you don't want to wait much longer. You don't want the summer heat to get too intense because these are plants, I know they're native to Asia. I think they're native to fairly cold climates in China. And from what I've heard, I'm surprised they're not grown more often. There is so much interest in the possible medicinal powers of the goji berries. And apparently, it is an excellent landscape plant. I mean, even if you don't harvest and process the berries, it'll flower for you in the summer, and then I believe it produces fruits sequentially throughout the summer. If I remember correctly, it's been a while since I saw one of these things in a catalog. I think the flowers are really interesting looking, and the berries are very nice. What kind of spot do you have to plant it in? Say full sun, half sun?
Well, it gets mostly morning sun. It gets full sun till probably about 1 o'clock.
Okay, so that's going to be tight, you know.
And then it'll be shaded sun.
Right. Well, no matter what, I think the plant's going to survive just fine in your area. Certainly, you're in an area where the plant is reliably perennial. The more sun it gets, the more flowers you're going to get and the more fruits. Fruiting plants tend to need the most sun of all. But this is a plant that is rated to be able to take some shade. And, you know, morning sun is something that a lot of plants like. So the new advice on planting long-lived shrubs and perennials like this is not to improve the soil in the hole.
Okay.
Is it bare soil where it's going to go in? Is it a lawn?
No, it's lawn.
So what are we going to do to get rid of the grass, Jer?
I'm going to dig around it and take up the sod there. And I thought about replacing it with some good potting soil.
Well, what you want to do is cut away the sod and then dig. And what kind of grass, though? Is it going to keep trying to grow back towards the berry?
Probably will.
That's something that you always have to be aware of with a plant like this. So what I'm going to suggest is you get like a sharp linoleum knife or something, and you carve out a nice circle of turf. And then go take that turf if it's in good shape and put it someplace where you need maybe a little bit of replacement. and loosen up the soil in the hole, but don't add any more soil to the hole. If you do need to add soil, get it from someplace else on your property, because you don't want to make the soil in the hole nice and rich, or the plant roots won't spread out. But
okay.
I think you're going to have to install edging around the edge, because grass is the enemy of all plants, especially if it's a rhizomaceous grass. If it's creeping sideways like bluegrass,
yeah,
it's always going to be trying to invade it.
Okay.
And then put the plant in high. Don't plant it too low. You want it to be high in the ground. And then when you're done, then around the top of the plant, mulch it with a good 2 inches of nice black yard waste compost. That's where you want to do your soil improvement, right on top of the surface of the soil. And don't expect too much from a plant like this the first year, but you know, next year it'll start to take off, and then the third year. I will tell you that if it does well, and you're not getting the kind of berries you want, you don't think the problem is sun. They are self-pollinating, but even with self-pollinating plants, having two or more in the landscape always greatly increases the amount of fruit you get.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. Good luck. Good luck with your great goji experiment.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
See you later.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that teachers in the Philadelphia area are invited to learn how to build a school garden. When the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society's Green City Teachers Program presents an intensive 2-day workshop on Wednesday and Thursday, June 26th and 27th at the New Foundations Charter School. Pre-registration is required. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and 16 good reasons to leave those clippings where they lie. I'm Mike McGrath. I never lie. And this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden. Burpee is dedicated to providing all things needed for planting and growing gardens. Information, instructions, supplies, and more online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to a very important question of the week. Why you should leave grass clippings on the lawn. Yes, you should especially leave them on the lawn if you are foolish enough to have herbicides applied to the lawn. But even if your lawn is good and organic, and thank you, by the way, you should leave those clippings where they are. We'll explain the myriad and many reasons why after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sarah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Sarah.
How are you?
I am just fine today, thank you. Where is, well, I should ask how you are, actually.
I'm terrific, and I'm in Moorestown, New Jersey.
There you go, right across the bridge.
That's right.
All right, what can we do for Sarah in the Garden State?
We have a question about dandelions. We grow our lawn. We have about an acre of lawn. We grow our lawn without any pesticides or herbicides or any nasties like that.
Good.
But we have loads and loads of dandelions. And this year we purchased one of those water weeders and had a big time digging out several hundred dandelion plants from the yard. We looked on your archives and saw that they could be composted in our compost bin. But when we threw a few in and covered them with dry leaves, by the next day they had stood up and continued to grow, or at least continued to mature toward white seed heads.
Yes.
So we were concerned that we would just be doing the dandelion crop a favor. They're all in bags.
Gotcha.
They're not in the compost heap, but can we compost them? About two-thirds have yellow flowers, about one-third have white seed heads.
Right. Now, did I turn you on to the water weeder?
Oh, you absolutely did. We looked her up on your dandelion reference in your archive, and we purchased one from Lee Valley.
And I think that is the only place you can get these tools, which astonishes me, because they are so useful. It's a long, thin spike.
Mm-hmm.
You jam into the ground, and you attach to your garden hose, and it has a trigger. And when you pull the trigger, all of your water pressure goes into this tiny little laser beam of water that saturates the root system of the plant you want out, making it very easy to pull. Sometimes they just pop right out of the ground.
That was our experience, is they just popped right out. We did this about 2.5 weeks ago. So before things got too mature, before the taproots were too deep. But not before some of them had developed seed heads. And
right.
That's our real concern here.
And see, that's my other favorite tool. That's the flame weeder.
Uh-huh.
When I'm killing dandelions, which I do harvest from my compost pile, the first thing I do is use my flame weeder, which is almost a similar but opposite device. It's a small propane-powered torch.
Mm-hmm.
With a self-igniter, a little clicker, and you click it and you wave the flame around the head of yellow dandelions and they wilt, or if the dandelion has already formed the puffball, you hold the flame over top of that and it explodes in these great munchkin fireworks. It's tons of fun. But you are absolutely correct in that dandelions are incredibly rich in nutrients that should mm-hmm. be turned into compost. But you have to avoid those flower heads.
Mm-hmm.
Those flower heads.
We hate to waste the nutrients.
Yes. So I would suggest you leave the bags out in the sun
mm-hmm.
until, you know, all of the flower heads are pretty much destroyed, either, you know, melted or desiccated, and then go through them. And the only thing you want is to chop up the roots and mix those into your compost pile with well-shredded leaves and maybe some coffee grounds to make sure that things heat up. The mm-hmm. roots are, I have been led to believe, the roots are possibly richer in calcium than almost any other plant source.
Mm-hmm.
So having a calcium-rich compost prevents blossom end rot in tomatoes, makes cucumbers and the resulting pickles crisper. There are so many plants that are desperate for more calcium in their soil, and it's a nutrient that is often missing in our soils. So mm-hmm. ixnay on the flower heads, for instance, if you want to do this with the flame weeder again, you know, take all the pulled dandelions and just use a pair of scissors to take the flowers
mm-hmm.
off. And
uh-huh.
then trash them. And then you probably do want to dry out the roots a little bit, lay them out on, you know, like a stone surface in the sun for a couple of days. But then dice them up. Mix
okay.
them in real well with shredded leaves. Then mix in coffee grounds. And what will happen is the resulting compost will be very rich in calcium, but the compost pile should heat up enough to prevent any of those roots from germinating.
Excellent. All right, great. Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, thank
you. I really
you.
Appreciate your advice on this and so many other things. And your archives, great.
Thank you very much. You have a great summer.
You too. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alan, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to talk to you. I love your program. I think you're wonderful. But I moved down to Virginia Beach almost 4 years ago, and you're not broadcasted here.
You can listen to our show through the WHYY website, through youbetyourgarden.org. I think the podcast is on iTunes. We're all over the place. But if you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, you can listen live. You can listen to old shows. You can download the podcast. You can have more fun than should be legal.
Super. I think I figured out what I have. It's terrible, I think. The rosette disease.
Ah, okay. So you have
knockout roses, and I was noticing that on one of the plants, this bunches of darker red leaves were growing, and they look like too healthy to be true. And the stems, whereas the regular stems are about, I don't know, 1 to 2 millimeters in diameter, these stems are more like 4 to 5 millimeters in diameter, and they're chartreuse, you know, they're bright green.
Right. No, in other words, you have these knockout roses that were probably growing fine for years.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it seemed like a different plant was growing out of parts of them.
Yeah, just parts.
I think you've identified the problem. This is called rosette. Now, it's funny. I just had a big conversation with my friend Howard Garrett. He is a contemporary of mine. He does organic gardening advice down in Texas. He calls himself the dirt doctor. He thinks a lot of the problem is in the knockout variety of roses. Now, knockout roses are extremely popular because they were bred to be extremely disease-resistant. Howard thinks they were overplanted and that this virus, I believe it is, has become endemic in knockout roses. And he's kind of urging people to back off and consider planting other types. And if you go to his website, he has a very complicated cure for this. But I will tell you, I made Howard feel bad. Because this happened to one of my roses 3 years ago, and I had no idea what it was. It actually looked like the native wineberries, the invasive ornamental raspberry relative that has the beautiful red canes, somehow had intermingled with a rose that I had growing in my front yard, which is a flower carpet rose, one of the French landscape roses. It was meant to cover like bare ground or problem areas. And I was fascinated by this growth. I was wondering if I was going to get berries off of it or something. Until finally, somebody mentioned to me it was a virus, it was a disease, and it was going to kill the rose. So I forget what time of year it was, but I just pruned off the area below where it came, cutting into healthy rose. And, you know, just taking the other parts, I probably threw them in the woods, threw them in the trash, something like that. And luckily, I didn't know that this was an incurable disease because that took care of it. After that,
That's what a friend of mine says. He says he thinks they grow so fast that maybe if I prune it way back that it'll grow out of it.
Absolutely. And what you want to do is you want to make sure you don't spread the virus with pruning. And a lot of people will tell you to wipe your pruners with bleach or something.
Well, he said to do that. What do you think?
Oh, God, no. If you really feel compelled to use something to clean your pruners, you can use rubbing alcohol or white vinegar. But the classic answer is just cut below the disease. Never expose your pruners to the disease part. Cut into the healthy rose. You know, take your prunings and put them in the trash, then keep an eye on it. If you're lucky, it'll never come back.
Thank you so, so much.
All
really
right.
Really appreciate it.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Tainted or not, your grass clippings belong on your lawn. And no, they don't cause thatch. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, please read this week's first of several questions.
Thanks, Mike. We heard from Mike in Ashburn, Virginia, who writes, My father-in-law bags his lawn clippings for the first few mows of the season and doesn't switch over to his mulching mower until the weather warms up, around the beginning of June. He says that the clippings don't decompose in cool weather and will build up thatch. I, on the other hand, set my mower to mulch right away. So does time of year and or temperature matter for using a mulching mower? Both of us have compost bins for leaves and other yard waste, so any clippings we do bag won't go out to the curb.
Well, you are right, and he is wrong. Most American lawns are starved for any kind of natural food, and grass clippings are the most natural food a lawn can receive. By weight, they're an astounding 10% nitrogen. That's about the same as poultry manure, corn gluten meal, bat guano, and other natural high-nitrogen fertilizers. And it's the exact amount of this essential plant food that lawn grasses crave. Returning your clippings to the lawn gives the grass a gentle, slow-release feeding every time you mow. Removing the clippings literally starves the lawn. And this thatch nonsense is an old lie that just will not die. As Iowa State University turfgrass professor Nick Christians has explained many times on the show, thatch is a thick mat of dead roots, stems, and rhizomes that builds up at the soil surface, creating a visible layer that can interfere with watering and harbor disease. But thatch is the result of overfeeding with chemical fertilizers, not returning clippings to the lawn. In fact, clippings are a cure. They raise the level of biological activity at the soil line and help break thatch down. True mulching mowers, machines with sealed decks and super sharp blades, pulverize those clippings into a fine powder that's virtually invisible. The smaller the particle size, the greater the biological activity, the faster the thatch will be composted back into the soil. And cool weather is not an issue. The nitrogen in those clippings is going to heat things up nicely. So always mulch your clippings back into the lawn. Returning the clippings reduces your lawn's food needs by half. And why would you ever want to take free food away from your lawn?
We also heard from Betsy in Falls Church, Virginia, who writes, Should we put our grass clippings into our compost pile?
No. As we just explained, those clippings provide a gentle feeding to your lawn every time you mow and help break down thatch, so they should always be returned to the turf. And grass clippings can be really problematic in compost piles, often adding way too much nitrogen to the mix and turning the pile into a stinky mess. And there is another, much more ominous reason to not collect or compost grass clippings.
And for that, we go to Joan in Princeton, New Jersey, who writes, Every year I use about 7 cubic yards of municipal compost to help make my clay soil more productive. However, this year, I am worried that the compost may contain imprellis residues and do more harm than good. What do you know about the severity of this problem? I do make my own compost, but there is never enough.
Well, it's not just imprellis. Several recently developed, quote, persistent lawn herbicides survive the composting process so fiercely that the resulting black gold becomes real killer compost, as in compost that kills your garden plants. Imprellis is the one that most people know about because it made the national news a few years back for killing untold thousands of trees and landscape plants that were growing in or near treated lawns. The truly insidious part of this story is that many homeowners don't even know that their clippings are toxic. Most, if not all, of these persistent herbicides are, quote, for professional use only. And so the actual lawn owner never sees the warning. Buried in one case on page 7 of a 9-page label that warns not to compost the clippings. A homeowner who has a service spray their lawn but who then cuts it themselves could inadvertently use those clippings to make compost that kills their veggie garden. If they put the clippings out for collection, The municipal compost those clippings become could kill thousands of gardens. So if your lawn is treated with any kind of chemical herbicides, don't collect the clippings or allow anyone else to collect them. And the relatively new issue of the safety of bulk municipal compost? Better facilities have begun testing their finished compost for residues of these herbicides. So ask your source if they are, and if not, why not? My local compost site simply cut to the chase and now refuses to accept grass clippings. And as Dan Sullivan, who wrote a great article on this scandal for Mother Earth News, explained in an interview on our show earlier this year, you can test bulk compost by planting some pea seeds in it. Peas are especially vulnerable to these herbicides, and if the young plants come up healthy, the compost should be safe to use. Well, that sure should have been enough information to get you to cancel those herbicide sprayings now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over carefully, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to spray me if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Put the actual subject in the subject line. And check voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems. Hint, hint, just like yours. Hint, hint. In our Garden Answers A to Z section, listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and follow us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer today has been Charlie Kyer. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's Internet Illuminati. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at our Facebook page. Our unsprayed editor is Al Banks. Our well-mulched intern is Jolie Higazi. We had lots of very special help today from Cecily Garber. Safe for Composting, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm finger-pointing, foot-tapping, head-shaking Mike McGrath, reminding you that only you can prevent your lawn from being tainted. And you don't want to see me standing in your front yard when a spray truck of doom pulls up. So I'll trust you to do the right thing. And then I'll see you again next week. Is it a beautifully scented vine or an unwanted invasive? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll look at the many moods of honeysuckle. Plus your fabulous phone calls.